to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one we intend to win.
Welcome, everyone, to this week's episode of Deep Space High Sci-Fi TV Review Podcast, where we break down the latest and possibly not so greatest from today's sci-fi television. I'm one of your hosts, Jedi Master Steve.
And I'm Sky Marshal Chris.
So, Chris, since the last time we recorded, we had some trailers drop for Star Trek. There was a new season 4 trailer, which I had not watched for Discovery because, you know, I don't want it to spoil anything that happens in season 3. Right. There was a Lower Decks
Star Trek news
trailer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there was even a Picard teaser. Mm-hmm. Did you happen to see any of those? All of those?
I have not seen any of them yet. I knew about them, but I have not seen them. And I also heard that an actor is coming back to Picard.
They teased the return of Q and the guy who plays Q.
Mm-hmm.
And Lower Decks looks interesting. That's probably behind Strange New Worlds. That's probably the show I'm looking forward to watching most. Given, and that's surprising given that it was probably my least exciting show going into it, like into the first season. So,
I'm looking forward to season 2 of Lower Decks. Hell, I'm rewatching Lower Decks right now. I was watching it before we even hopped on to this episode. I mean, it's still funny as hell.
Yeah, you mentioned it. I wasn't even going to bring up the trailers until you brought up Lower Decks. So I'm glad you brought it up before we started recording because I was like, mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, we got all of this because that dropped on. Was it April 5th that's First Contact Day?
Yes, it was. Yes.
Yeah, so.
April 5th, 2063. That is First Contact Day, which I did also rewatch Star Trek First Contact for First Contact Day. And I rewatched that episode, Deja Q, from season 3 to honor, because that's when they also announced that the actor who's playing Q is returning for it. So,
yeah.
Saw both of them.
Very nice. Well, I think you had something else you wanted to bring up for this cold open, too.
Oh, yeah. I just it was a question that I saw, and I thought it'd be an interesting debate for us to have. Which would be more effective means, I guess, of mind control? Would it be the Vulcan mind meld or the Jedi mind trick?
Probably the mind trick. I always thought the mind meld was just sharing memories, not really controlling anybody.
It can be. You can implant suggestions in the other person's head. You can control their minds. Well, you can to an extent. It depends on how strong their mind is and the type of species.
So that's the same with the Jedi mind trick. Depending on how strong a person or the species' mind is will determine the amount of manipulation you can have.
Essentially. Which is why I thought it'd be an interesting debate given Star Trek, Star Wars, which would be the more effective means.
I think the mind meld or the mind trick, because you don't have to touch anybody to perform a mind trick, but you do have to be force sensitive. But then again, you have to be a Vulcan and you do have to touch somebody for them. I'm going with mind trick, the Jedi mind trick.
Yeah. But the mind trick, you don't have to touch anybody, but it doesn't seem as effective when dealing with stronger minded people to where depending on how strong the mind of the Vulcan is, they're able to penetrate through or get through even the strongest minded other creatures just because they're disciplined so much greater than most.
Still.
I mean, it's safe to say that a Jedi would not be able to do the Jedi mind trick on a Vulcan.
Probably not.
I mean, I could just hear Spock's response to Obi-Wan.
But would a Jedi ever let a Vulcan get close enough to perform a mind meld? Probably not either.
I don't know. You'd be surprised.
I don't know.
Vulcans are supposed to be
question, but I'm going
faster and stronger than humans. So,
and then the Jedi can just wield their lightsaber and take them out.
Yeah, that's true.
Or crush them like Vader.
I don't know. I just thought that would be an interesting debate or interesting conversation.
It is. But I think we can go. Yeah. Go ahead. Get into our first episode of the day.
You can do it. You you can do it all night long.
Yeah, sure. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it.
Okay, man, let's do it.
I mean, come on, I just don't see a problem here. Let's just do it.
I'm gonna go do it.
All right, so what do we got in store for this week's episode?
So today we are talking about Star Trek Discovery, still episode or season 3, episodes 5 and 6, entitled Die Trying and Scavengers. So I guess we'll start off with episode 5. Now, we get our first look. They didn't say where this new Federation was located, but we know the Discovery crew knows where it is because of the events that took place in episode 3. So they arrive there and they see a floating rainforest, and it's really a couple minutes or a couple scenes of the crew geeking out. You know,
For all the new ships, I'll admit that some of them were interesting. The holographic holes, the
organic holes, the neutronium alloy fibers, which is just like a super advanced shielding. Mm-hmm. So I've been told. Yeah, then the holographic containment fields, a new Constitution-class ship, which can hold 2,000 people. Now, I know that's a lot for them, given that he could only hold 100 tops. I think there was 80-something was the compliment that came over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think...
Yeah, if you noticed, Voyager J, which is the 11th generation of Voyager, so Voyager's still kicking.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What was the Voyager number Voyager?
I think it was just their identification number. I don't know off the top of my head.
I don't know if it was A, B, C, D, or E.
It wasn't. There was no A, B. It was the original, just like how the original Enterprise was just the Enterprise. So they added it after the ship, the original ship was decommissioned.
Gotcha. So, yeah, we saw that.
That was interesting, though, that they even maintained the same ship structure. Like, it looked almost the same.
Yeah, the sleek, almost scout ship.
And it was interesting, that containment field that they went into, it almost looked like a warp bubble. I don't know if you noticed this, but I thought that was really cool. Here, I'll send you, I'm actually sending it to you right now, an image, what it looks like of a warp bubble in Star Trek, and tell me if that external thing looks like it. I sent it via text, but I also noticed that did you notice that kind of reminded the way that you have to enter a certain spot otherwise you won't be able to enter? It was very Endgame like, or was it Infinity Wars, to where to get through that shield you have to go through a certain section of it?
I don't know the Avengers reference you're making. It kind of looks like a warp bubble-esque with a center.
I think it's Infinity Wars when Cap and them are trying to get to Wakanda and they're getting through their shield.
Oh, yeah.
And they were hoping, similar concept, I guess, for this, which makes sense.
Yeah, good way to keep them hidden, because the only way to stumble upon them is if you know where they're located and how to enter.
Now, I wonder what happens if they don't know how to enter. Like, what if you went into the wrong spot? Would you pop through on the opposite end, or would you just get destroyed?
I imagine it'd almost be like running into a wall. But maybe at some point we'll see a ship, an unwelcome ship, coming in and see what happens. It might act like a shield and just, you know,
bounce off. Huh? I don't know.
Or a ricochet, like a...
I don't have a point of reference for what happens if a ship runs into another ship shields. That's actually a first. Usually they've found a way around it, like to where they would.
Yeah, there's been no collision courses.
Yeah, well, they would do something pseudoscience, adjust the phase harmonics of the shields or something to find a way to go through them or such. They've never actually, I don't think they've ever done it to where a ship's crashed into another ship shields. So they should explore that.
That'd be cool to see. Yeah, that'd be cool to see.
Almost like with Star Wars when you saw the hyperdrive when the first time the ships crashed. It was like, never thought of it. Wonder what it would be like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was something. They were talking about how there's detached nautilus, which were like nacelles. The engines aren't, they're not attached. You know how you would see like the little singular structures, you know, connecting and running up to each engine. It's almost like it's a force field or a tractor beam kind of just keeping it there.
I thought they said it was like programmable matter that that we're kind of getting more into that programmable matter rather than the holo technology as a, you know, as a means of kind of keeping it nearby but detached. And supposedly it's supposed to help with maneuverability. I don't really get why.
There's no dragon space, though.
So. Yeah, I know. That's why I'm like...
Unless they were referencing atmosphere maneuverability, which I can get because it'll be drag.
Yeah, that's fair.
But
I mean, maneuverability is still a thing in space. It just depends on
the... It might be one of those things. It's less mass, so the thrusters are able to work more efficiently.
Mm-hmm.
Because you still got to think of it, the more mass an item has, it's going to take more energy to
carry the weight,
move that item. Yeah. So if it's less mass, more, it's easily maneuverable, you know, with less energy.
Yeah, that could
maybe be. That's what they were referencing. I didn't know we were going to go that sciencey into the episode, but we did.
Oh, it is a sci-fi show, so.
It is a sci-fi show, but that's the only thing I can think of. I mean, barring the vacuum of space and no drag.
And I'm
curious.
The
mass of the object and moving something that size. Yeah,
because, well, that energy field was supposed to be powered through all of the ships, and they had something connected to it. I'm curious what that is. They didn't really go into it in episode 6, and we kind of see it in episode 5, but I'm like, what is it like? You know, how does it work? If all the ships leave, does the field get powered down, or, you know, is that what's charging up their warp cores?
They did say something about that. I don't know.
Yeah. Because I guess they still have warp technology, they just don't have sophisticated warp.
They don't have the dilithium to sustain warp.
Well, in episode 7, they were talking about real dilithium.
We haven't got to 7.
Six. So they were talking about real dilithium. So it almost seems like the dilithium that they're using is artificial means, and that's why they can't
synthetic.
Travel very
that's
fast.
That's why they just do sub-warp travel.
I think they could still do warp, but it's like low warp. That's why it's still taking like months to get to where they are.
Maybe. Well, let's talk about the plot of the episode instead of just all the technology that came across.
But that's the best part.
I know it is the best part. And I feel like it's going to be the bulk of the conversation. That's why I was like, let's get some plot out of the way. And then we talk about more technology in a little bit.
All right. Well.
So we see the Federation for the first time. We see the commander-in-chief of the Federation, who is an Admiral Vance.
That guy looked familiar.
Yeah, he really did. And I didn't look at IMDb to see where he is from. I probably should have. You know, typically I do that kind of stuff, but I have no idea.
You know, wasn't he the guy from The Mummy? The guy, not the Egyptian who was trying to protect him?
No.
Are you
that
sure?
That is not, yes, that is not. I know, the bald guy.
No, not man, him.
That is not Billy Zane.
No, that's not who I'm thinking of. I'm thinking of the other guy. He was a part of the secret society that was trying to, you know, prevent the Egypt from the mummy from being resurrected. He was their friend. What's his name? Not McClane, but his friend. I'll IBD him.
Look, I don't know who the fuck you're talking about. Because the only person I can think of is like Billy Zane or
No, he was like in the second one. He led the army of against the army of the dead in the Scorpion King. But he's in both of them.
Say the second one, you said.
Yes, in both of
them.
The
mummy.
The first one and the second one.
Oh, I'm just
I think I'm fairly certain. I'm like 99% sure it's him. But I don't know what his name is. Mummy cast. Come on.
You're killing me, Smalls. You're killing me. Yes, he is in The Mummy as an Abrith Bay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there you go. He is in The Mummy.
Here. Yeah. Now
that
you
guy.
See him, you know which one I'm talking about, right?
With the...
A little bit.
Damn, he aged a little bit.
But then again, this movie did come out in 99, so it was over 20 years
ago. Yeah. So... we do meet Admiral Vance for the first time, played by... Damn it, I just closed IMDb, so I didn't see his name.
Here, I think I still have it. It is Odin Fehr. F-E-H-R.
Fear? Fair?
Odin Fehr.
Odin Fehr? Yeah, that looks right. Okay. So, played by him, and he is very... As we've seen, everyone has been so far very distrusting of the Discovery crew, given how old the ship is, that he doesn't buy their story because Starfleet records of the time say one thing. They're obviously here on the doorstep with a 900-year-old ship saying another thing. So he's having a hard time believing him. And rightfully so. And trusting him. And we'll probably have a hard time trusting him at the end of this episode and last episode. Or next episode, I should say.
I mean, he has every right to be suspicious. I mean, it's a far-fetched story.
Yeah, and there's no records collaborating what they're telling him. And there, as Saru said, there wouldn't be because Starfleet scrubbed all of it. The spore drive was top secret. No one wanted anyone to know about the sphere data or control or anything like that.
Which it seems interesting that they send it to a time now that has the capability of having the same problems that they had back then with the sphere data. I mean, I think they still have artificial intelligence or these.
Right. It maybe like delayed the inevitable by like 930 years.
Like, they still have more advanced technology. They still have AI, robots. They got the holograms. I like that they kept the EMHs. That's funny. It was entertaining.
Yeah, they came off as a little annoying, kind of the point. My opinion.
I'm kind of glad that they kind of stuck with the holographic route, especially with Picard, because in Picard, they were talking a lot about android rights, but in Voyager, that was huge when it came to holographic rights, because holograms were used as a form of slave labor. I don't know if you know this, but the EMH, the first model generation that was used on Voyager was actually scrapped and is used as mining holograms. So I'm curious if they're going to stick with the hologram route and kind of go more into the holographic rights and the evolution of that, since they already kind of showcased Voyager J and that was kind of Voyager's thing. So it'd be something interesting to see if they go down that route.
We'll see. But the plot of this story is set up by, we see some sick aliens. I didn't see their species, but essentially they travel to a planet that is now a dying or dead planet. And it used to be a mining facility, according to Saru. They got themselves sick on some local vegetation, and now the Discovery has to go track down the USS Tikoff, which is a seed vault ship, and find a sample of seeds from prior to the burn and prior to the downturn of that planet to concoct a cure for these alien species. And that's kind of their, like, I'll say foot in the door. It's their way to start building trust with the Admiral, saying that they are who they are. And we learn at the beginning of this, the Admiral wants to split up the Discovery crew, and the Discovery leadership, Saru and Bretton, are adamant on trying to keep the crew together, because no one can function as well as a well-oiled machine like they do. No one knows the ins and outs of their crew and their ship like they do. So that's the plot of the story, and it was a meh plot in my opinion. We did have some interesting backstory with Commander, or is it Lieutenant Nah, the one who can't breathe oxygen, Lieutenant Commander. Has those metal tubings on her Commander.
Yeah, we did. Because we find out that her species is the one that is protecting the seed vessel.
Yeah, I guess they alternate. It's like they do, 6-month missions on it or 1-year-long missions. And, a different group of people or a different family or whoever will kind of just, I guess, wander around space and protect the seed vault. And whenever they're called upon, they'll do
it. I don't know. It was a believable storyline. And it actually, I didn't think it was that bad. It had a believable explanation for what happened to the crew who was on the ship. And
it wasn't as exciting. I wasn't as drawn into it. It was a very realistic and believable one. And when they explained what happened and why the dad was phasing, kind of like he could make himself invisible and then appear at random times, that all made sense. It was just one of those, I wasn't drawn into it because there was, it was a lot of backstory on Gnaw. And it had a lot of similarities. The writers kind of played it like they did with Irium, where, you know, they gave a good backstory. They want to make you feel a little more for the character. And then, I won't say write her off because they didn't kill Gnaw, but at the end of it, Gnaw decides to stay and look over the seed vault.
I think she was supposed to take the vault back to her home planet. And that's why she wanted to do it, because she said that she did not get a chance to see her home planet beforehand. They were not a part of the Federation before she left. So it's more of a sentimental route. And I kind of agree, but I thought it was better of a moment than what they did with Arium.
Oh, it was much better. Because, and I'll say this, you saw Gnaw more. You had more interaction with her. While you saw Arium, she was just kind of there in the background. Where Gnaw at the time, or in season 2 and 3, there was times where she was front and center and we learned a little bit about her throughout those episodes, where we didn't get that with Arium. So it was a much better scenario that played out for her versus the Arium. You know, hey, we're going to dump everything on you this one episode. Yeah. And then I'm curious.
And this is just something that I noticed, or something that I picked up when watching it. I'm curious what planet she is actually from, because her species look familiar.
They say, but
yeah, I don't know what it was, but the male actor from whatever species.
Bizarren. She's Bizarren. I'm
going to go back and rewatch that, because the actor, or
I think this is the first time we really see
him. I don't know, because the actor or the species who played the male version of it in the show, he looked like one of the actors from Star Trek Enterprise when they were on shore leave on Risa. Sato, or Ensign Sato, encounters an actor and species that had almost identical makeup to them. And I'm curious if that was supposed to be the same species. It may not be, maybe completely unrelated, but they looked identical. And I'll have to go back and find the episode, but that'd be an interesting connection. Since it seems to be going back to this core root style of small Federation, rebuilding, re-exploring these early core planets and exploring these older Federation planets. I'll be curious if they go that route.
Yeah, it looks like, just reading some of it, she appears in the Next Generation's episode entitled The Price, or not Gnaw, but a Bizarren or whatever. And just from what I'm seeing, they might have been in a little bit of Deep Space Nine, because it's talking about the Bajoran wormhole. I don't know. But yeah, that's Bajor, but I guess the Bajor, or not, the whoever.
Bizarrens.
Were involved in the negotiation of the rights of the wormhole.
Oh no, I know. Okay, I know which one it is now. So it was the Next Generation. It wasn't the Bajoran wormhole. They found a stable wormhole that the Ferengi tried to purchase, and this was actually in Deep Space Nine, because what happened was, one of the ends of the wormhole, they had really no natural resources of their own. This was the only thing that they had was theirs.
Oh yeah, this is the one where it was stable, right, on one side. So the wormhole was kind of whipping
back and forth across the galaxy at the other end, and the Ferengi kind of got caught, and they got caught in the Delta Quadrant, which Voyager actually stumbles across in their journey, and they actually send them back 7 years later, which is an interesting episode. But yeah, okay, that's why they look so familiar. That's the same species from the Next Generation. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And they weren't a part of the Federation at the time, which coincides with their storyline that they didn't join until the 25th century, which is next century later. Okay, cool. Yep. Good on them.
So, okay. So it is accurately reflecting in previous Trek
yes,
shows.
Yes, I do. And Chris, I very much like that. Yeah.
Chris likes it when they get their shit right. Oh, yeah. And hates it when they get their shit
wrong. If you're going to do it right. don't fuck with something that other people love. You know what I mean? If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And it was funny seeing the interaction with the crew, because when the Admiral sends them on this mission, there's a contingency. He's sending a couple people with them to supervise, and Saru has to stay behind because it is a low-risk mission. And he doesn't want the Discovery crew to just take off, so he wants the captain to stay behind. Which, yeah, it was just funny seeing the interactions, you know, as we see with Reno, Tilly, and Stemmons in engineering, when they're bouncing ideas off each other and they're working together, but in a dysfunctional type situation. And
yeah, I mean,
and just seeing some of that banter and interaction with a non-crew member, seeing it from an outside perspective was funny. They're like, ah, yeah, we're used to this. And we're like, we're not used to this.
Oh,
we're
working on this. It was great. And I like it. I love it. I mean, you're getting more interactions, more development from the rest of the crew. And it's not just the Michael Burnham story. It's a, hey, well, let's get some of this crew involved. Let's get more interaction, screen time, script time. And let's start building some chemistry here amongst the crew. And let's start getting the audience invested in some of these characters and these relationships. Like this, the relation, those Tilly, Stemmez, and what's the Reno
and Reno Stemmez. And Stemmons.
Stemmons.
Not Stemmez. I don't even know where you went.
Like that relationship, I'm really enjoying it because it's funny as hell. It works well, and it's working well. And you know,
Yeah, it's a nice dysfunctional comic relief.
And then
relief.
Tilly, she's still
it works.
Yeah, and even Tilly, Tilly's still the highlight of the show, in my opinion. Like they're getting a lot better with these character development. And I like it.
Yeah, when we get into the next episode, I do have some things I want to say about her, and we'll get into that here in a minute. But so you know, a typical Star Trek fashion. After they leave Nam behind, you know, Brenham comes back, saves the day. The sick aliens are no longer sick because Colbert was able to come up with a cure. Yeah, it was a typical. You can't say filler episode because there was a lot of information here, and you learn something. They're foreshadowing something. There was a part where Brenham was watching the holo recording of the family who was staying on the seed ship, the Tickoff, and the girl is playing this note and this song that what's her face? I say what's her face. That sounds terrible.
Oh, the Trill.
The new, she's not Trill, but the one carrying the Trill symbiote.
I can't remember what her name is either.
I can't either. It starts with an A. I'll find it at some point. But
yeah,
where she, her, the girl in the hollow and her were playing this same note. And Brenham was like, how is this possible? And someone was like, well, it's pretty, someone from the New Federation was like, well, it's a pretty common song. But she's like, how can someone from two distinct parts of the galaxy with no warp capability know the song? And when the burn happened 150 some odd years ago.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting, they're definitely setting it up for something, and I'm curious where it's going to go. I have a feeling it's going to pertain to the burn, because that seems the direction that they're going to be going in based off of 5 and 6.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's...
We'll see. They did a lot of setting up for the burn, especially in 6.
Yeah, well, 6 was pretty much just all around the burn.
But one thing...
Essentially.
Yeah. But one thing I want to ask before we move on to 6. How did you feel about Lieutenant or Lieutenant Commander Nah leaving the Discovery? And it looks like she'll be off the show for the foreseeable future. They didn't kill her off, so there's a good chance she'll come back. But how did you feel about that?
I kind of liked it. You know, one of the things with her character was you never actually saw her smile anytime throughout the show, and you got to see her smile for the first time. You actually get to see what her actual eye color looks like, because apparently the perception of your eye color is different for her species based off of the atmospheric conditions. So
yeah, it seems like, I think from season two, they breathe in mostly nitrogen.
Interesting.
Or there is some gas. I thought it was nitrogen, but it's weird because you know, Earth is 80-75% nitrogen, and we only breathe in the 25% oxygen.
I don't know. That's always kind of confused me.
I don't know. There, it was some. I'll have to do some research on what they can.
But breathe. I mean, it was you saw a lot of growth from her in this episode. A lot of just what her environment. It was a good, satisfying way for them to write off the character that wasn't killing another red shirt. You know, it's nice to see the crew members who sacrifice have happy endings, and it's even though it was kind of for tragic reasons why you're staying because the guys that pretty much got a death sentence. But I don't know. I thought it was kind of a nice way for her to, if they were going to get her off the ship, this is the best way for them to do it without having to kill her.
Yeah, it's one of those, you know, they probably don't have much going for her this season. They're like, well, there's no point in just keeping the actress on for her to play, you know, sporadic little part. So it's probably a good way to get her out of the season without actually writing her.
I would not, you know, like killing it if her that's off. The reasoning behind it, because the whole point of what they're doing is to, or they should be doing, is to build the character development for the rest of the crew, to start making it feel a little bit more Star Trek and to integrating them as part of their day-to-day episodes. That's why I didn't mind this one, because again, you're starting to see that integration of the rest of the crew and the storylines, the character developments that, you know, it's, they're all a part of the missions. It's not just Burnham doing whatever the hell she does, breaking orders and getting in trouble again. You know, that we've had that for two seasons. So
yeah,
yeah.
So you think they would, you keep her on the show. I don't know. Maybe there was an actress. Maybe she wanted to play other parts too. I don't know the reasoning. I didn't research it. I just know they didn't kill her off. So yeah, there's
she
a good chance
and she might
could come
again.
Back.
We've only seen 6 episodes.
So we don't know.
Whew. Yeah. Sorry. I'm tired.
So the only thing I found about their breathing is it's vague. So it just says they're unable to breathe oxygen, nitrogen, atmosphere. The gases they're used to breathing are just toxic to other humanoids besides themselves.
I mean, it makes sense. Yeah.
So that's all I know. So it's not nitrogen. Mm-hmm. It's some other sort of toxic gas. So there you go. Johnny on the spot research. Now, I guess I could tell you how I felt. I was a little sad when they wrote her off.
I mean, she was growing.
I'll keep it short and sweet. I liked her. I hope we can see her come back in later seasons, since we know they are doing a season 4. So I hope this isn't the end of her road. I hope we do see her come back since she's not dead. So we'll see. But there's another character. There's a blonde character who took over Irium's spot, who I kind of hope.
Yeah, she's already gotten some speaking.
And just kind of see some of the other crew. Yeah, she got some speaking lines. And see them. I think it's Price. And who's the other guy? I don't know. There's a couple other bridge crew members that I want to see them develop. The two guys who kind of are off in the back. I think one who does tactical and the other
who's
does
the damn it, I can't remember his name either. Guy with the bigger eyes, the alien Natsuru.
Oh, I don't remember his name. We'll find it. We'll talk about that here in a minute. But yeah, he was funny to watch.
It's funny because I do the exact same thing in his place.
Yeah, well,
and that's probably why.
Yeah, it is just like, we'll start talking about episode 6. But yeah, he was funny. It was fun. He was a good comedic relief without, you know, trying to be too comedic.
But I mean, long story short, with episode 5, they managed to get the seeds. They saved the day. What's her name? Stayed behind. Her semblance of self-sacrifice was to stay with the ship and take it back to their home planet and complete their species mission.
I didn't think it was taken. We got to figure out more about that, because I thought it was just like going around in space. I didn't really think they were on just taking it from one planet to a new planet. I just thought it was one of those that kind of wandered space, and whenever
the planet to planet would make sense if the speed that they travel, which is slowing down, you know, so one planet or one species could take charge of it for a year, be in charge of it, take it to the next planet as a drop off. Hey, your guys' turn. You guys pick yours, take it, and just kind of keep bouncing back and forth between planet to planet forever.
Good. All right, well, we'll go ahead and start talking about episode six, Scavengers. This is another interesting episode. Sort of. I don't know how I felt about it. I don't know. I'll make up my mind when we do.
I was a little disappointed we didn't get to see the
this one's
the head honcho. Well, do you remember what the name of the boss was? Because the guy that Giorgio was dealing with, the Orion, he was the nephew.
Oh, that was a girl's name.
Well, women are the bosses in the Orions.
We will.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's what he was saying. He worked for his aunt, and no, I don't remember her name.
Yeah, off the common top of misconception. My head. A lot of people think that for the Orions, that the males are the slavers and the women are the ones that are enslaved. It's actually the other way around. The women enslave the men. And for the record, the Orions are the same people with the Grant. You know, the dancing green ladies from the original series. So, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, but it was one of those, I mean, we'll set up the plot. You know, book ship ends up at the Federation's location somehow.
The autopilot. I don't remember him having they said in the recording, if he didn't get back by a certain time, the cat would.
Yeah, but I don't remember him having the coordinates to it.
Oh, I don't know either. They might have. It was supposed to be like a couple weeks ago. They said it was.
Yeah, so, but I don't, you know, from the time they figured out where the Federation was at the end of episode 3, when the symbiote carrying lady was able to pull the memories, I didn't think they interacted with Book, so I don't know how he got the location.
I figured maybe Burnham told him, you know, since he was looking for another black box and potentially found him, maybe she gave him the heads up.
Maybe. I don't know. Then the timing's off because he's been captured for 3 weeks. So how would he know the ship?
Well, it was automated. If he didn't come back within 24 hours, he said he programmed the ship to head there with the cat.
Right. You know. But he's been missing for 3 weeks.
Probably took that long for it to get there.
But I'm thinking the events of episode 4 and episode 5 took place just days before they arrived at the Federation ship. So how could a ship know where to go? 2 weeks before they even know where to go. That's where I'm getting confused with this timing issue.
Well, that's more time passed than someone needs they're not saying.
Yeah, that could be. But essentially, you know, his ship shows up and it's the Grudge
that
cat.
That was funny.
Cat's name's Grudge. That was funny. Like, you know, Tilly's like, Grudge? And everyone's like, what? You know who this cat is? That was funny, and you know, in my opinion, the cat kind of stole the episode. Mm-hmm. You know, I think a lot of the best moments from the episode came when the cat was on screen.
Star Trek
like,
has
yeah.
a thing for cats. I don't know why, but they do.
Yeah, they do between Spot and whoever else. But you know, this leads after they find out. Okay, Book's missing. Brenham's like, we gotta go get him, and then she brings it up to Saru. That he's missing, and that they were on a search for the year in between when she landed and they landed. They're looking for black boxes to try to piece together what the hell happened during the burn. If it was a simultaneous event, if it was maybe a plot to destroy the Federation or just destroy warp capabilities, period. So she goes to Saru, is like, I need permission to leave. He's like, no.
Right.
And then she just does it anyway.
Yeah, well, again, essentially, we're back to the Burnham does whatever the fuck she wants show. She undermines Saru's authority by doing so, because they're trying to make good with the new Federation, which they started to do with the last episode, and then the mm-hmm. Federation or Discovery was supposed to be on standby in case of an emergency situation breaks out in peace.
Yeah, they were in diplomatic negotiations.
Yeah, and they were breaking down, and they needed to be ready in case hostilities came about, and she was not there, yeah. So she got her – she chewed her own ass
They
out.
Did mention it. Wasn't it at the start of this episode? When did they explain the retrofit to the Discovery to upgrade weaponry,
shields? Oh, this was at the very beginning, as they were doing the opening scene, I think.
Okay, so that's what it was. So now, you know, a 900-year-old ship has got a facelift.
Pretty much.
And has futuristic tech along with their spore capability.
Yeah, their new combat is cool. They got tricorders built into them. They got communications. They got site-to-site transporters. Yeah, and that's why the one dude... I can't remember what his name was. He was just fucking around with the personal site-to-site transporter. And he just kept popping into the random place. He accidentally popped into the captain's chair. Oh, this isn't the mess.
This
hall.
Isn't.
Sorry.
Yeah.
He just popping into the elevator when supposed makeout scenes are about to happen, which, again, we called. We knew there was going to be a love interest there. But
yeah.
I mean, at least if they were going to go that route, they made it funny by adding that scene.
Yeah, that was the best part of that. Because Brenham's just hooking up with anyone she could hook up with.
I guess.
This point. I'm trying to find it, the character, and I can't think of. Oh, keep going. Anyways,
ooh, you know who we haven't talked about these last two episodes? We haven't talked about Georgia.
What?
And the shit that's been going on with her.
Yeah, I was about to bring her up because, you know, she was getting interrogated in the fifth episode, and she figured out the hollow programs that if you blink at a certain rate, it'll deactivate.
Yeah, if you blink, I think she said blink at the same frequency as their hollow matrix projects, it will destabilize their matrix. I think that's how she.
Yeah, and while being interrogated by the older guy, who I guess was in charge of the hollows, you learn that it seems like no one has crossed into the mirrorverse or vice versa since. Deep Space Nine, if not longer, because he just said 500 years.
I think it's... No, it would be after... There would be after Deep Space Nine, because they're in the 31st century. 500 years would put them in about the 26th century, so that's 200 years after Deep Space Nine. But...
Okay, so there...
They did...
But
they
did,
the explanation that they gave was interesting. The reason why they weren't able to cross over is because the distance between the two universes has been expanding over time.
Yeah, and in the way the guy said it, he pretty much inferred it was when the Terran Empire collapsed is when the mirror universe started moving further away from this primary universe.
I don't know if that's true, because the mirror universe started to collapse not long after Spock became Emperor. Because Spock became the Emperor, according to Deep Space Nine, Spock became the Emperor not long after Kirk's visit. Changed everything, put it in a lot of reforms, and it weakened the Empire to the state to where the Klingons, the Bajorans, and the Cardassians were able to form an alliance strong enough to defeat the Terran Empire. So, which is why by the time Deep Space Nine rolled around, Terrans were slaves to that alliance.
Oh, okay. Well, the way he inferred it, I had a different impression of it. So
yeah, but he did
not the case. The big eyed guy is Linus.
Linus, got it. Okay,
the one who is transporting all over the place.
Yeah, because which is interesting. I really hope they explore this route. Is that Georgia leaving the Terran universe is kind of what was responsible for the downfall, which allowed Spock to take over, and hopefully they kind of explain it that way. I hope they.
Maybe that's what they were inferring. I don't know, but there's a lot of issues going on with Giorgio after the interrogation or the questioning or debriefing.
Yeah,
they
she
say.
Keeps.
You know, did something happen? Because she keeps like spacing out and having these flashbacks.
Almost like she's remembering
over and over. I think they're flashbacks. If they're maybe
repressed
they're
memories. Seems like that's what she's starting to see, instances of a repressed traumatic experience. Because I mean, what we do see is that she's calling for somebody, and she's. It's clear that she's looking at her hand and it's covered in blood, and which is weird because you would think, you know, it's the former empress of the Terran Empire. They talked about how badass she is and how awesome she is and how she doesn't really give a shit except for revenge. But
yeah, so it leaves you to believe the blood on her hands is Brenham's blood.
Yeah, and that she's starting to remember that traumatic experience. because that the guy with the glasses, which is why the fuck do you have glasses in the 31st century? You know, he's going back and forth with Giorgio, and he's keeping up. He's just as smart, just as clever as she is. And I think he even got in her head a bit when she was trying to get into his head about people being usually most people's weaknesses are other people. He kind of flipped it around and was like, oh, is that why you came to this universe? Because, you know, you're thinking of somebody. You know, it could be those flashbacks of...
Yeah, and it was inferring to Michael.
And that's kind of when all these flashbacks started was... But then again, she did say when Burnham asked, because I think that interview was in episode 5... And she asked about it in episode 6. Mm-hmm. When did this start? She said
you
a couple weeks ago.
At the end of episode.
So maybe it was a couple weeks passed by between.
Could be. There could have been some time. So it's just.
And that was their way.
I wish it was a little less subtle. It needs to be a little more. 3 weeks since the last event.
So you want to like MCU saying big bold letters where it is and how much time's passed? You know, 5 years later?
Yeah, I don't like the guessing game. It's annoying, but you know, Brenham does her own thing anyway. She recruits Giorgio to go on an unsanctioned mission. And of course, Giorgio being Giorgio,
all for it,
happily obliges and accompanies her to go rescue Book and a bunch of other Orion slaves who were working at the scrapyard for whatever reason, they did.
And I'm glad that they added a little bit of depth with that Andorian character. Andorians kind of get a bad rap of being short-tempered assholes,
right?
It's nice to have a little bit of depth in
here's what kills me. Arium and Nah will be on the show for I don't know 5-6 episodes and get very little. This guy's on it for 5 minutes in this episode and we feel more for him than we did some of those characters. You get a better backstory. They did a great job explaining his backstory, why he's so hated amongst the slaves even though he is a kind of a slave. And that's what kills me about some of this writing is characters who we're supposed to love and who are a part of the crew, they don't really go into, but this guy who is not a part of the crew, they actually do an excellent job developing his character in the short time he has. It's like, come on, Paramount / CBS, get it right. I guess it'd be Viacom, fucking Viacom. So, I mean, that's I liked it, but it's like, come on, man, you gotta do better. Yeah. It's like you gotta do better with some of these other characters.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree.
I mean, we won't get much into that scrap scene while they're on the yard. I didn't really care for some of the events that took place there, except for the Andorian story, which was. Mm-hmm. The most fascinating part about them being on that planet.
I'm trying to think if there was just anything else that in that scrapyard scene that I thought was interesting or anything that I wanted to bring up.
You know, there was one thing. So when hell breaks out loose and Brenham and Giorgio start the prison break, or Book really starts the prison break, and you see Giorgio and Brenham come in with Book's ship. You know, comes in, starts lighting up some of the slavers who are trying to shoot the slaves and prevent them from escaping. So they come in, you know, do their little strafing run. And instead of having to bank and turn around, the ship comes apart and reconfigures itself so that it's facing 180 from where they just came from. Do you notice that?
No.
Oh, my God. Go back. You got to go back and watch it.
It was almost like turned. But I thought that they would just turn to fly in a different direction to get through the building.
No, well, they turn, like, I think the main section might have turned, but everything else, so like the remaining 60% of the ship kind of came apart and reconfigured itself as like the programmable matter that it is. And instead of, you know, coming around and doing a bank and relining up and strafing and then doing it again, it just pretty much was an about face. With a reconfigure and a quick spin.
It's interesting.
Go check it out. It's like 2/3 of the way through the show, and I thought that was fascinating.
Maybe we'll check it out.
And I was so confused. I was so confused watching it the first time. I was like, what the fuck is going on with this ship? Yeah. And then it did it, and it turned around. I was like...
What are your thoughts on this reprogrammable?
I don't know how I feel about that.
I mean, it seems like it's a very versatile tool, but are they just going to throw it around wishy-washy doing everything?
They will. I mean, it's cool. It's a cool concept.
It is. It's an original concept. It's something. Well, I don't want to say it's original, but it's a...
Yeah. It's a Star Trek concept and a new technology in Star Trek. So it is cool to see. I just don't want it to become the great escape and the answer to every question for 90% of the problems that they're going to have throughout the show.
Part of the nice thing about Star Trek they had realistic, it was pseudoscience, but it was most of their stuff was still based in science. So there was some realistic, plausible explanation. Usually what they did was the scripts was they actually had scientists and they left out the, just left it blank where in the script where they, and they said, insert scientific name here. And they would just have the scientists come in and throw in the names of the technology. They would just kind of go from there. So that's
So I like
what they should be doing.
I like the programmable matter for now. So we'll see. As long as it doesn't get overplayed. And hopefully if they stay with Discovery, which is still an old ship, even though it's been retrofitted, they hopefully it won't be the end all or the answer to all questions. So But I want to talk about Tilly because, as I mentioned earlier, there was something I did want to mention about her. And it is how much she has grown and understood the duty of command.
Right.
Because when Saru is like, he realizes Brenham has been missing, he immediately goes to Tilly because they're best buds and she pretty much tells Tilly everything. When Tilly doesn't know anything, Saru is, he's contemplating. He's like, do I tell the Admiral? Do I not tell the Admiral? You know, he, his hands are kind of tied. And that's when Tilly goes, well, sir, you have no other option. You need to tell the Admiral because if he finds out from another person, you know, it's going to put a bad rap on the entire crew. So I was just like, it was another moment where I was like, way to go, writers. You're doing something right again. You're opening, you're seeing Tilly grow. And you're showing her that she is command capable. Like, she understands that they are in a unique situation. They're already in doubt by the Admiralty. And that, you know, there doesn't need to be any more, what's the word I'm looking for? Any more shade thrown their way or mistrust thrown their way because of one bad egg who is being insubordinate and doing her own thing.
I don't know.
So, kudos to the writers. I like it.
It's a stark contrast between Kirk, you know, for Saru being the captain of the ship, going to an ensign for advice, even though they are close friends. You know, part of the thing with the original series was that the captain's supposed to be seen as almost like this godlike figure. Not that it was like a godlike figure, but, you know, he had to be. He was the captain. He, you know, they had to look up to him. He had to be their foundation, their... The rock, yeah, so essentially. And then Saru, you know, is very different style of command. He's still learning, you know, how to command or how to be a captain. And it's like, I get it, I get getting the recommendations or hearing the opinions of your subordinates. But this is, you know, this kind of advice, I don't think you should be going to somebody who's not necessarily just became an ensign.
Well, that's the thing. I don't think he actively sought out her advice. It was more of, she's got to know what Brenham's up to and what the hell her plan is. So they go there and then she kind of reads him and it's been like, here's a piece of advice.
Yeah.
And he's like, that's great. Cause I don't think he actively sought out her advice. It was more of figuring out what the hell Brenham's doing. And then just so happened, the conversation turned into her thoughts and seeing her grow and then him continue to grow as a captain. Since he is he's in his infancy as in his captaincy. It was just great to see, and I like Saru.
I do too.
And I'm liking seeing him grow as a captain and a character.
I'm still trying to figure out that walk that Saru does. You know,
the
hand behind the. It's kind of hard to do. I've been trying to figure that. I've been practicing. Yeah, it's almost like a Conor McGregor style walk. But it's almost a little bit different.
Yeah, it almost is like that. So. Yeah. It is like that. But they also mentioned that the Kelpians and Kamenir, I think that's his homeworld. They also joined the Federation, and that, you know, the Doc was saying this, Saru, you're unique because you know, it's been a while since anyone's been able to study a Kelpian who has recently came out of Vahari, that growing and, you know, losing the Tendrees or Tendai or whatever they call them.
I thought he said that it was the first time they could study it because any Kelpian that goes through Vahari, because I thought that he was insinuating that Kelpians don't go through that process anymore, that they evolved beyond it.
Yeah, that's kind of what I meant. So, you know, 1,000 years of evolution, who knows how much has changed.
Yeah. So probably not as much as people would think. It takes a long time for evolution to happen. Humans haven't really changed over the last 1,000 years. We've just gotten smarter.
Yeah, somewhat.
Yeah.
To an extent. So let's talk about Brenham's discipline. You know, she gets back. She gives herself an ass chewing from the Admiral, but the Admiral kind of gives her an ass chewing and recommends Haru takes disciplinary action, which he does. He demotes her from XO to Chief Science Officer and kind of restricts her duties for the time being. And it was one of those things where you see Saru struggling with it, and even Brenham said this, it's the right thing. She is insubordinate. She's not learning her lesson. And Saru said it, you know, he kept beating the drum on this notion that, you know, he would think she would be more mature. She would learn her lessons. And he even disclosed it. I think it was Tilly that he has not had this much distrust from her since the events of the Shenzo. Mm-hmm. And he's right. It's like, it's one of those, Brenham's becoming one of those frustrating characters to watch because, you know, it's always my way's the right way and every way is wrong.
Yeah. I mean, she's getting used to getting back in the habit of that command structure because she's kind of been doing it her own way, you know, winging it for the past year. And now she's got to get thrown back in the Starfleet, thrown back in command and thrown back to taking orders. I mean, you would think that she'd be more disciplined given she spent so much of her lifetime studying with Vulcans. Like, what happened?
Vulcans in Starfleet.
Like, what happened? All that discipline.
I guess a year with good dick will throw away that rest. That discipline.
I don't know. I mean, hell. I don't even know if that's true because didn't they just start this episode?
Yeah, but how can I know?
That was funny as hell. I mean, it's probably... be better if he had the vibrating dong, probably, but
yeah. Hey, oh, that's a throwback to our first episode. If y'all haven't checked that out, go ahead and check out our first episode where
that
Data's vibrating.
That brings up
dong.
A very important question. So with this programmable matter, does it make it easier to grow your dick?
Oh my
Can you control it with your mind? Like it just gets larger?
No.
Are you sure? Like it seems like
unless there's programmable organic matter.
Hey, they got organic ship holes. I think they can come up with programmable matter to make your dick longer.
No, here's a better question. If someone uses the programmable matter to create a dildo or vibrator and then turn around that programmable matter gets thrown in with the rest of programmable matter and then turn it into a bed, are you sleeping on your vibrator?
I think the principle would be sound. Would they have like their own like
you know what I'm saying?
And if that's the case, okay, wait, would they have their own like programmable matter rooms, kind of like holodecks, to where you can like make your own real shit? But then would that be real people that you'd be making, real sentient people? If you were to do that on like the holodeck programs, I bet Riker would have a field day with that programmable matter.
Oh yeah, Riker would have a field day in this programmable matter brothel.
Oh my gosh, imagine cleaning those filters.
Oh my god, the show took a weird turn.
It did, but
we've been pretty good at staying somewhat like just comedic and professional, and then it took a very adult turn. Okay, all right. We'll see how that goes amongst the listeners. If you like it, you don't like it. We're not going to change it. We're just going with the flow here. So, but I wanted to ask you, how do you feel about Brenham after watching this episode? And now it's to the point she pretty much gets on my nerves every time I see her on screen.
I know. I mean, I'm kind of that same way, especially with like her hairdo and the dreads. It's come on. If you're going to be wearing a proper uniform, you got to stick with the regulations. What's up with the most ships? When
the hair doesn't bother me as much as, you know, she's an XO who
it's
she's a loose cannon and she just. she's too much of a liability. She's more of a liability right now than an asset. And, you know, the Admiral said it best. If they, as in Brenham and Saru, would have came to him with the information of these black boxes, there is a good chance he would have deemed the mission worthy of going on. Maybe not right at that moment, since they had a tense situation going on with whatever, but they would have most likely pursued the mission anyways.
Right.
And instead of just going under the back, why don't you just do, you know, they've pounded, especially at the end of season two, Starfleet principles and, you know, this isn't what Starfleet is. And then they go and do what Starfleet's not.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, Starfleet does not disobey orders. A good officer, while you got a point and you can make your case, you got to follow command. There's a reason why the chain of command and the command structure is there. And it's just, I feel like she's so contradictory at the moment that it just pisses me off to watch her in the show. And I kind of hate that she's the main character. I'd rather Saru be the main character, or Tilly, or Stemmons.
I hate the fact that there is a main character.
Yeah, and there really shouldn't be, because seeing their advertisement, she's pretty much the poster child everywhere you see for Discovery.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one thing Star Trek has pretty much always been, with the exception of Picard, since the show is about Picard and he is the main character, but the crews of these ships are the main characters. So you could have a Picard story, a Worf story, what's this, Dax from Deep Space Nine, the Ferengi, whatever. Just,
yeah.
And you could have different episodes about different characters, but with her being the main character, it's just...
The only argument I could hear would be the original series was a Kirk-centric storyline, but that's not entirely true, given it was more of a trifecta between Kirk, Spock, and McCoy.
Yeah.
They were the original,
with
the
occasional Scotties and probably
Chekhov, once they got Chekhov
and so Saru or so Sulu. Sorry. Sulu.
Yeah, a lot of very similar sounding names in Star Trek.
Yeah, so it's just one of those. I just need the attention off her. She's dragging the show down, and it's not the actress. It's just how they're writing the character.
Yeah.
And it's just the character is pissing me off, and they really need to go on to.
The character has developed so much over the last three episodes, but just not in a good direction. That they need to they need to either take it in a different direction or pull her as the main focal.
Because I feel like they're backtracking with her right now. It just feels like, you know, now she's the same loose cannon she was in season two or season one, who committed the mutiny and disobeying orders. She's losing the trust of her. Of her captain and, you know, probably some of her fellow shipmates.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just one of those. I liked episode two when they focused on the Discovery crew and she was out of it.
Yeah.
And I think there needs to be more, not to knock the character, or not to knock the actress because she's great, but to knock the character and how they're writing the character. We need to focus on the other characters because she needs to take a step back, which I know the actress isn't going to want to do, but
I don't think they're going to. I'm pretty sure she's in season four, so
she is, and she's been the poster child, and it makes me think what the hell's happening to Saru, because, you know, I don't think I've seen advertisements, and I haven't watched the trailer, but I haven't seen any other crew member in there besides her.
Mm-hmm.
So
I don't know. I'm worried that they're Star Trek. I don't know. Hopefully, Star Trek, it looks like they're trying to go woke, and it doesn't look like it's working.
Go woke, go broke.
Hell, Marvel's finding that out.
You got to have inclusiveness, and I don't want to say keep the politics out of the show, because I know prior series, you know, would bring real life politics, but you just can't. There's times when they feel like they're shoved in our throat, and there's times when they're elegantly done. And,
right.
You know, even watching Next Generation and you see, okay, they're clearly talking about certain issues that happened in the late 80s, early 90s that are still relevant today. Mm-hmm. And you see those issues in it, but it's more elegantly done than, you know, let's shove this ideology down someone's throat. And that's all I'm going to say about it. It's like,
right. I don't even know.
If you want to have that, mm-hmm. just do it in an elegant, a great storytelling way, not, don't let the storytelling sacrifice for the message you want to portray, because I'm not for that.
Oh, and I agree fully, you know, 100%. And I'm curious, and I'm a little nervous about how the rest of this season's going to go, because after watching six, you know, one of the things, I don't remember if it was five or six, but they talked, Saru was talking to the Admiral about the Renaissance and how this was supposed to be similar to the Renaissance.
It's like the Dark Ages. Coming out of the Dark Ages.
Well, the Renaissance in was the rebirth, which is a French term, or which is a French, it's a French root of
French for new,
rebirth. Yes. It, and essentially what it happened was there was new information of old ideals, values, and principles came to light where monks started to translate old Latin and Greek into modern vernacular for the people to read. And it was a part of this rebirth of ancient culture and knowledge. So for Saru to be making this same claim about what the Federation is going to be about, then this needs to be that similar to the Renaissance compared to ancient Rome, to where they're going back to same timeline, 1,000 years. The Renaissance happened 1,000 years after Rome fell, of this rebirth of this old ideology, values, sets of principles that built the Federation. And I hope they go back to it and they stick with it and stick with those values and those principles, which if you clearly watch, you know, any of the original series, The Next Generation, the earlier Star Treks, they were very well defined, and it was individual freedom, principles, liberty, democracy, you know,
civil rights, individual
rights. You know, these are the things and the principles and the values, non-interference. The Prime Directive was there for a reason. I really hope they go back and really explore these roots and don't try to change it to what today, what wokeness of today. I hope they stick with the original principles that they did from the original show. If they can do that, it might go and be a success. If they don't, if they try to go woke, they might go broke. And I think that might be what happened, given that we're late to the game.
Could be, but I think we've had enough ranting between yours and mine. So one last thing we'll talk about in episode 6, and that's the burn. We get information about the black boxes. They find a third one, or actually Book finds the third one. They analyze it. And it's from what Michael was saying, is it seems like that her theory was that if this was a simultaneous event with that occurred within dilithium or whatever, all the black boxes should have stopped recording at the same time and recorded whatever explosion occurred at, say, 9 o'clock. But she's not seeing that's the case. They're seeing they're at varying times, which is suggesting to her that there was a point of origin for when these explosions started happening, almost like a nuclear bomb. So the closer you are to it, the sooner and the earlier the date the black box will cut off.
Right.
So the further away you are, will show kind of, and her goal is to kind of use the three to triangulate a possible point of origin. We might even see, I can see them going to seeing multiple point of origins where it was almost like several nukes going off at different locations causing these problems. So
I'm curious, what do you think is going to be the explanation behind the burn? We're about halfway, a little over halfway through, and it looks like that's going to be the main focal point for the rest. Or no, we're almost halfway through. So what are your thoughts going to be on the burn?
I think you're going to see like this Orion Andorian crime syndicate behind it. Some criminal organization who wanted to get rid of the Federation so they could kind of fill the power vacuum and do their own thing.
That's interesting.
So the burn was a manufactured event that was made to look like an accident.
Interesting. I was actually thinking a different direction. I don't think it has anything to do with the Orions and the crime syndicate. I think they just so happen to be the beneficiaries of the burn. But I think it's actually the Federation's fault. I think the Federation was trying to do something new or trying to do an experiment, and it went horribly wrong. And that's why they feel so...
I think they would have more information on that, unless this was like a Section 31, you know, absolutely no intel or information on this experiment whatsoever, like a Manhattan Project experiment.
Oh, it very well could be.
But more secretive.
Yeah, because, I mean, keep in mind, this was something that we talked about. This was something that we talked about in previous episodes about the Omega Particle, which was from Star Trek Voyager. They were trying to experiment with new means of propulsions, and the Omega Particle, a single particle became unstable, completely destroyed an entire space station as a physical damage, but the damage to subspace destroyed or made subspace inhabitable or transportation in that star system. I don't want to say mute, but to where they could no longer create a warp bubble in that star system. So we've seen it before where the Federation's experiments led bad. Maybe that happened again.
I have a second theory, I guess, between the two of us. You remember that Next Generation episode where there was a species or a planet where it was along like a trade route and high warp was kind of destroying and causing some sort of radiation and kind of destroying the planet? And that's when the Federation implemented explicitly given no ship is to travel above warp 5.
Yeah, because the warp was accelerating the destruction of subspace, which was creating the anomaly.
What if that species or the fact that they were still traveling at too much high warp led to the deterioration of subspace and essentially shooting themselves in the foot?
Could be. I mean, that's either another
that species came back and we're like, okay, we said no more high warp travel. You're just causing more damage. We're going to, and almost terrorist-like did something to where it really hurt the Federation, or the Federation shot themselves in the foot because of so much excessive warp travel. Those are my theories.
Yeah, that'd be an interesting
one. That one's far-fetched.
Yeah, I thought you were going a different far-fetched theory. The back to the first season to where those aliens that inhabited the highest levels of, maybe they got into it and finally got their revenge on Starfleet and the Federation by destroying all their ships.
That would be the shittiest way to finally close that storyline.
Oh my god, that would be. Know what? I believe Viacom would do it.
Probably.
I believe they would do it. So
anyways, that's all I got. Any thoughts, overall thoughts on these episodes? How'd you like them? How are you liking season 3 as we continue to chug along?
Season 3 has actually been my favorite so far.
Ooh!
It's still my favorite so far. I am actually into these episodes a little bit more than you are. I have enjoyed them a little bit better. I will sit down and watch them now, to where the previous seasons I just like was kind of there and sat and I watched them a couple times. But I'm actually starting to get into them. So
I'll say this. I think the expectations were so low that it's almost like they're more enjoyable because you expect it to be bad, or if you set the bar high, you're never going to achieve your expectations. So
that's totally fair. I mean, I was the same way for Suicide Squad. Yeah. I thought I walked out of Suicide Squad thinking it was a good movie, but I was expecting it to be shit. But
it was one of those, it's one of those, there's still a lot of time left in the season, but it has been more enjoyable than I thought it was going to be. So that's all I'll say. Even though there was some med parts there in episode 5 and 6.
Oh yeah.
But anyways, we will move on.
Shall we punch it?
Punch it, we can beat him.
Punch it,
kill
it.
Punch it.
Punch it!
Punch it!
Punch it, Hawkeye!
Punch it! Punch it! Let's get the hell out of here.
Let's punch it.
Alright, well, what do we got in store for next week's episode then?
Next week, we have more Star Trek Discovery Season 3 with Episode 7, Unification. I'm assuming this is 3 and not III. So, Unification 3 and The Sanctuary as Episode 8. So, we'll see how those episodes are. I mean, they could be something. Unification, I guess. It seems like the Discovery is kind of going to go around a current Federation planets, the 39 planets that the Admiral mentioned that is currently in the Federation, down from over 300. Yeah. They're going to go around and try to do some diplomacy and start rebuilding. So,
yeah, it'll be interesting seeing them go back through all the core worlds, basically almost returning to the start of the Federation again.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll hit like Vulcan and maybe Andoria, or, some of the OG founders of the Federation.
Yeah, I'm curious if the Federation will ever reach the same heights, though. You know, probably not. or if it's what we'll see is more like the Holy Roman Empire, a shale comparison, trying to
probably
reach the same scope of Rome, but never quite getting there.
Probably. That's probably what we'll see.
All right.
So, but that's what we have next time on Deep Space High.
All right. Well, I guess that'll do it for this week's episode. Thank you, everyone, for listening to Deep Space High, and be sure to join us next time as we continue the discussion on Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah, and don't forget to keep the conversation going over on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, wherever you do hashtags, with hashtag Deep Space High, hashtag Tacos and Trek. And don't forget to keep the don't forget to follow us on our Facebook page at Deep Space High Sci-Fi TV Reviews, or our Insta, yes, I said Insta, at Deep Space High Podcast. If you follow those, you can stay up to date when we remember to post them for or on our latest announcements. I have been pretty bad at keeping up with our Facebook page, so I got to step up my game over there.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, we've been just struggling to begin with. Hell, we were even late with this episode, so it's just...
Yeah.
Time has not been our friend right now, unlike Discovery. We want to ask you guys, please, if you like what you heard and you want to hear more, please give us a 5-star rating at Apple Podcasts. It really helps out the show. And if you want, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts, preferably a good one. Or if you want to leave a question or ask us a question, you can check, you could DM us at our Instagram or on Twitter or on Apple Podcasts, and we might answer the question on the show. I'm Sky Marshal Chris.
And I'm Jedi Master Steve.
Live long and prosper.